Our next case, I'll call it case number 61059, Bullion Monarch Mining, Inc. v. Barrick Gold Strike Mines, Inc. We have Mr. Pulsenberg here representing the appellant, Mr. Wickstrom representing the respondent, and this is a certified question submitted by the federal court. Mr. Pulsenberg, you may proceed, and would you like to reserve some time for rebuttal?
I'm going to try to save 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, Dan Pulsenberg for Bullion Monarch. And as Your Honor pointed out, this is a case with certified questions from the Ninth Circuit involving the rule against perpetuities. The Ninth Circuit asks, does the rule against perpetuities apply to area of interest provisions in commercial mining agreements, and if it does the reformation provision of NRS 111.1039 allow for reformation? Let's take the first question, and I'm going to spend most of my time there. The rule against perpetuities and commercial agreements in general is a very bad fit. There are two approaches to the rule against perpetuities in commercial situations. One, taken by Barrick and the district court and by the Weddell case in Indiana, is just a hard and fast rule. If there's a provision and for a future interest and it can vest more than 21 years in the future, then it is void ab initio. The other approach is to take a reasonable commercial approach and look at whether the provision is an unreasonable alienation of interest. And that is the reasonable approach we're asking this court to adopt. Barrick comes in and says, well, no, you can't do that. It's a hard and fast rule. It's enshrined in the Nevada Constitution under Article 15, Section 4, that says that perpetuities, except for charitable purposes, will not be allowed. But that's not what that means. It doesn't mean that you can't have any future interest, because at the time, in 1864, 150 years and a week ago, when Nevada became a state, that provision was clearly designed only for family-oriented donative transfers, wills, trusts. That's what it's for. It's even in the record of the Nevada Constitution where the person who's proposing that it be adopted says, if we don't have this, we're going to have the same kind of perpetual family interests that they have in England, sort of like at Downton Abbey. So that is what we were really looking at when we're looking at the rule against perpetuities. We're not looking at commercial interests. In fact, the first case I've ever seen where the rule against perpetuities was applied in a commercial context wasn't until 1882, and that's mentioned in the Colorado case that we cite out, Whiting Oil. It's a rule that applies in a certain context, and it's being misapplied when we look at commercial contexts. And that's not what the Nevada Constitution meant to do. That was clearly not its express intent. Now, Barrett comes in and says, well, it's a very broad provision. But, you know, this court has dealt with broad provisions before. NRS 1.030, which Barrett relies on, says that the common law of England is the rule of decision in Nevada. But this court has made clear that it won't apply in Rupert versus Stein. It wouldn't apply the spousal privilege in an automobile accident case because insurance is involved. The court said it's going to look at the conditions that are involved. And so let's look at the conditions that are involved here. Commercial transactions, it makes no sense to limit a future interest to a life in being or to 21 years, which is the common law age of majority. These are concepts that apply only when we're dealing about family donative transfers, and that's not what we're dealing with here at all.
Mr. Pulsenberg, upon what authority do you make the distinction that that rule does not apply or should not apply in the commercial mining sector?
I have a number of cases, but the case that I like the best, and we cite in our reply brief because it was decided in March, is the Whiting Oil case. We cited the Colorado Court of Appeals case in our opening brief, which had to do with the Reformation issue. And in March of this year, the Colorado Supreme Court sub nom decided Atlantic Richfield versus Whiting Oil. And it sets out the entire history of how courts have struggled with the rule against perpetuities, how it doesn't make sense to apply it in a commercial context, and how courts, academics and commentators have talked about how there should be a change in the rule, and how even the Colorado Supreme Court itself, it admitted it was applying the rule against perpetuities in commercial context when it shouldn't have been. It should have been applying the rule against unreasonable alienation. So it sets out its own history and the history of all the decisions. I also think there's support for my position in the statutory rule against perpetuities in NRS 111, where the Nevada legislature came in and codified that the rule against perpetuities applies in the situation of donative transfers. More accurately, in 111.1037, it said it does not apply to non-donative transfers. Now, Barrett comes in and says, well, what that really means is that the reasonable approach in the statute, the more generous approach, the lenient and liberal approach that loosens up the rule against perpetuities, it only applies in the context of wills and trusts, but the rigid, hard, and fast rule still applies in commercial transactions. That doesn't make any sense. Why would we apply the old, harsh, absurd rule in commercial transactions and a more reasonable rule for wills and trusts? And besides, when Nevada adopted the uniform statutory rule against perpetuities, is expressly in 111.103, subsection B, said that it should be interpreted to be consistent with the other states that have adopted it. And that would say, no, it doesn't apply to commercial transactions. Now, they come in and say, well, when Nevada adopted the statutory rule against perpetuities, it didn't adopt section 9, which says that it repeals and overrules the common law rule against perpetuities. We've set out several hypotheses for why Nevada didn't do that. One was that, well, the rule against perpetuities, when it was adopted in the Constitution, didn't apply in commercial transactions. But I really think the more reasonable approach is the Nevada legislature couldn't repeal the common law rule against perpetuities because the common law rule was in the Constitution. But it clarified what the common law rule was, and that it only applies in the sense of commercial transactions, or it only applies outside commercial transactions to family-oriented donative transactions. And what I'm arguing makes even more sense when we're dealing with an area of interest provision.
Mr. Poulsenberg, on the issue, there's some discussion reference as the rules of perpetuity. We have a contract interest, first interest in land.
Yes.
What's your take on that?
I argued in my opening brief that this could be construed as a contract interest only, and therefore the rule against perpetuities wouldn't apply. But honestly, it does seem like this court has held that interests, mining interests, are associated enough with the land that I don't think that I have the best argument there. But because it is a contract interest, I do think the rule against perpetuities should not apply to it. I don't think it's automatically exempted because it has nothing to do with the land, but I do think the court should make the distinction about the rule against perpetuities doesn't apply to commercial transactions. And I think that point is especially well made when we're dealing with area of interest provisions in commercial mining leases. There are a line of cases. It starts with Hansen versus Ware, Arkansas, in 1955, where it talks about the importance of royalty provisions and royalty interests. And that goes on to Denny versus Teal, the Oklahoma 1985 cases. case, Alabama, also in Dauphin Island, comes up. And all these cases lead to the Commerce Bank case, which is one of the two cases set out by the Ninth Circuit, the Missouri case from 1993. But what we're looking at here is an important provision. What happens in this situation is the predecessors of these two parties came together and entered into a joint venture agreement. And they said, okay, here's the subject property. We're contributing land. We at Bullion are bringing in other people who are contributing land, and we get two things out of that. We get a royalty interest in that subject property, and we also create an area of interest, 8 miles on any side of the subject property, a total of 255 square miles, where if Barrick, through its predecessor, acquires any mining interests there and develops them, and we correspondingly give up any interest in that property, we get a royalty there as well. It's almost like a memorialization of the corporate opportunity doctrine. And yet, it aids in the development of mining. It's important for these developments. But Barrick comes in and says, no, it's a hard and fast rule. They admit it's important provision. They admit it's a common provision. But they say, well, any good lawyer can contract enough so that it isn't a problem by putting a savings clause in there and saying that, well, it would be the acquisition of any interest of 21 years. Well, what they're basically saying is that the fairness of this provision, the consideration that we've agreed to enter into this joint venture agreement, depends on who has a better lawyer. And that just can't be the situation. Your Honor, I'd like to save the balance of my time.
Thank you. Mr. Wickstrom.
Chief Justice Gibbons, may it please the Court, my name is Francis Wickstrom. I appear here on behalf of Barrick Goldstrike Mines, Inc. The whole premise of Bullion's argument before this Court is that this Court is writing on a blank slate as a policy matter, that the common law rule against perpetuities never applied to commercial transactions in the state of Nevada. That argument is mistaken. Both this Court and, more importantly, the Nevada legislature have made it clear that the common law rule against perpetuities does apply to commercial transactions, both before and after the Nevada legislature adopted its modified version of the statutory rule against perpetuities.
Why then was the question certified to us if it's so clear?
Well, Your Honor, I think the problem is that this Court never expressly held that, but in the 1932, in the case of Aikens versus Nevada Placer, Inc., the plaintiff, which involved a challenge to a commercial mining lease, the plaintiff in that case argued that the challenge to the lease as a violation of the rule against perpetuities. This Court held that the lease did not violate the rule, but this Court did not say that the rule did not apply. It actually tested the transaction against the rule and said it didn't violate it. Then in 1967, in the Moore Park Manor case, which was another case involving a commercial option agreement, this Court stated, quote, an option actually intended by the parties to run for an unlimited time is void, end quote. That statement could not and would not have been made if the common law rule against perpetuities did not apply to commercial transactions. But more importantly, let's look at what the legislature has done in this state and why this Court should leave any changes to the Nevada legislature. In 1953, the legislature passed two statutes relating to perpetual care funds for cemeteries, NRS 452.110, subparagraph 3, and 452.170, subparagraph 2. Those provisions provided that the funds were not, quote, invalid as violating any law against perpetuities or the suspension of power of alienation of title to property. Significant statutes because the legislature, first of all, recognized both the rule against perpetuities and the rule against unreasonable alienations, recognizing that they were two distinct rules. But more importantly, for this purposes of this argument today, these laws would not have been necessary if the common law rule against perpetuities did not apply to commercial transactions. In 1967, the same year that this court decided the Moore case, the legislature adopted NRS 117.103, dealing with condominium developments, clearly commercial transactions. And the legislature provided the rules of property known as the rule against perpetuities and the rule restricting unreasonable restraints on alienation shall not be applied to defeat any provision of this chapter. Again, this statute would have been absolutely unnecessary. It would have made no sense whatsoever if the common law rule against perpetuities did not apply to commercial transactions. So let's jump ahead 20 years to 1987 when Nevada adopted a very modified version of the uniform statutory rule. Now the logic behind the uniform statutory rule is, as Boyden points out, the drafters of the uniform rule did not like the rule against perpetuities. They did not think it should apply to commercial transactions, but they recognized that courts had been applying it over the years, at least since 1882, to commercial transactions. And so the entire logic of the uniform rule was to have a section that specifically abolished and superseded the common law. Colorado adopted that statute. The Colorado legislature expressly said, we supersede and we abolish the common law. And that's why the Whiting case that is relied on by Bullion is of no help to us here. Because the Nevada legislature, I agree with counsel for Bullion, probably because of the constitutional prohibition in the Nevada Constitution, expressly chose not to adopt that supersession clause. And what they then did is they adopted a statutory rule that says it only applies to, or it does not apply to non-donative, i.e. commercial transactions. Let's jump forward, because actions that the legislature took after 1987 made it abundantly clear that they did not abolish the common law rule for commercial transactions. How do we know that? Well, in 1991, just 4 years after the uniform statutory rule was adopted in Nevada, the legislature adopted NRS 116.2103, subparagraph 2. It provides that the rule against perpetuities and the statutory rule, NRS 111.103 through 103.9, do not apply to defeat any provisions of the declarations, bylaws, rules, or regulations relating to condominium associations and homeowners associations. Again, commercial transactions. This statute would have been absolutely unnecessary if, as Bullion argues, the Nevada version of the statutory rule had abolished the common law going forward. 2 years later, in 1993, the legislature adopted NRS 452.725, subparagraph 3, and 452.695, subparagraph 3, dealing with endowment funds for pet cemeteries. And again, the legislature provided no such fund is invalid as violating any law against perpetuities or the suspension of power of alienation of title of property. Again, absolutely unnecessary. In 2001, the legislature adopted NRS 119A.380, subparagraph 5, dealing with timeshare developments. Again, absolutely, clearly, commercial transactions. And the legislature provided that the rule against perpetuities and the Nevada version of the statutory rule do not apply to defeat any provision of a timeshare instrument. Once again, absolutely unnecessary if indeed the common law rule did not continue to apply to commercial transactions. And finally, as late as 2007, the legislature passed NRS 116B.320, subparagraph 2, governing condominium hotels, commercial developments. And it once again provided that neither the common law rule against perpetuities nor the Nevada version of the statutory rule apply to declarations, bylaws, rules, or regulations relating to condominium hotels. My point, Your Honors, is that the Nevada legislature knew exactly what it was doing when it chose to adopt a more restricted and modified version of the uniform rule, as evidenced by its actions both before and after that time, expressly exempting certain kinds of commercial transactions from the application of both the common law rule and the statutory rule. And if the legislature wants to adopt an exclusion that relates to area of interest clause or mining agreements or the like, it certainly knows how to do that. And the court should leave that to the legislature because they have a comprehensive scheme for dealing with that. That's why looking to the Whiting case or the Colorado authorities is of little help here today, because Nevada is unique because it has both the constitutional provision that outlaws perpetuities and this very unique statutory development over the years relating to the statutory rule and its exemptions. California originally had the identical constitutional provision. They abolished the prohibition. Nevada tried to abolish it. Some people in Nevada tried to abolish it in 2002, and the people of Nevada rejected the constitutional amendment by a margin of close to 60% against 40% to keep it.
But if your point is that the legislature didn't need to enact these specific exclusions, if indeed commercial weren't included, the next point, though, is if commercial were included, then how could those even be constitutional under the constitutional provision that says, I don't have it at hand, but essentially it's a prohibition on perpetuities. So how could the legislature pass specific exemptions in that context? Do you follow the question?
Yes, Your Honor, and that may be a question for another day for this court to determine exactly what the scope of the constitutional prohibition is. It says broadly, perpetuity shall not be allowed.
Counsel, isn't that maybe why the Ninth Circuit referred it to us? You did a very good job of laying out historically, but that may be the nub of why it's before us.
I agree, Your Honor, that the Ninth Circuit did not want to guess how this court would come down. But perpetuities, it certainly leaves
to the... And it's hard to argue what the legislature thought it was doing with those. It's not judicial decision-making, so the specific statutes exist and they are what they are. But to my mind, you could also argue equally plausibly that all the passing of these statutes simply signify that the legislature doesn't think the constitutional imperative even reaches commercial and they want to just assure people of that. I mean, I think that's kind of a argument that goes both ways for you.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure it goes both ways because the legislature can probably define what a perpetuity is within limits. They've now defined on the donative side that they've added a 365-year wait and see period. This court may someday have to deal with whether by pushing it out 365 years they've effectively done what the people of Nevada did not want them to do, which is get rid of that constitutional provision, but that's really a question for another day.
Yeah.
The issue, I believe, for us to hear is that the history of this court's decisions and the legislature make it clear that the common law rule does apply to commercial transactions, and how far the legislature can go to eviscerate the constitutional provision, again, is a question for another day. The question that was certified to this court is merely, does the common law rule apply to a commercial mining area of interest provision in a commercial mining transaction? And the answer to that question should be clearly, yes, it does, based on the history of what this court and the legislature has done.
And essentially, if the legislature means to specifically exempt something, they're fully able to do that, and they haven't. I mean, that's your argument, basically.
Yes, Your Honor. They know how to do that, and they can.
But doesn't what they have enacted set forth kind of a policy consideration, and that takes us back to the Atlantic Richfield versus Whiting Oil case to consider whether or not this rule makes sense in the world of commercial transactions?
Your Honor,
are we precluded from examining the policy there?
I believe that you are limited by what the Constitution provides and what the legislature has done, because in Colorado, first of all, they don't have the constitutional provision, and secondly, when they adopted the uniform rule, they adopted a statute that says, we hereby supersede and abolish the common law. So in Colorado, the Colorado Court of Appeals was writing on a clean slate, because going forward, there was no common law.
So it's completely distinguishable in your mind?
Yes, because it's a very different situation. And again, in California is a different situation. Every state is unique because of either the presence or lack of a constitutional provision and how they dealt with adopting the uniform rule. I only have a minute left. I want to quickly turn to the reformation provision, if I may. And here again, because the legislature consciously chose not to supersede the common law on commercial transactions, it continues to apply. And it expressly chose to modify the common law only with respect to donative transactions. Section NRS 111.1037 expressly provides that the Nevada statutory rule doesn't apply to non-donative transactions. And then the language of the reformation section itself makes it clear that it only applies to donative transactions because the statute provides the court, quote, may exercise its equitable power to reform the disposition in a manner that most closely approximates the transfer's manifested plan of distribution. Here, that plan of distribution is a term of art. It applies in the field of estates and those types of transactions. And this court, that there's nothing in the 1979 agreement, the area of interest clause, that is anything remotely close to a plan of distribution. And for that reason, we urge the court to rule that the reformation provision does not apply.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And you have just about 4 minutes, Mr. Polsberg.
Thank you, Your Honor. In my briefs, I criticized Barrick's position for being rigid and mechanical. It seems now to be incredibly technical. With the litany of statutes that they set out, and let me be clear, those statutes aren't cited in any of their briefs. They're cited on pages 5 and 6 of my reply brief for the reasons that Justice Pickering said. What we're looking at here is a question of what did the common law embodied in the Constitution, what did it mean before 1987 with the passage of the statutory rule against perpetuities? And I say that this court should interpret that rule to be that it doesn't apply to commercial transactions, or if it applies to some commercial transactions, not to area of interest provisions and commercial mining leases. And I set out all these statutes, not 456, nobody set that out. But I set out 116 and 117 to point out that where the legislature created exceptions to the rule against perpetuities, the rule against perpetuities cannot be absolute. And you're in the same position the Colorado Supreme Court was in Whiting Oil, where the court said, we're not going to look at the reformation issue, we're going to interpret the pre-statute common law and say the rule against perpetuities does not apply to commercial transactions generally, and there to preemptive rights under oil and gas leases, which is a very similar situation. That's what I'm asking this court to do right off the bat. Now they, and clearly, Justice Douglas, there is enough of an issue here that the three judges on the Ninth Circuit did not feel comfortable making the eerie guess. This is not some clear-cut decision that that's easy to make where you just say there's a hard and fast rule. Commentators and courts for years, for 50 years, have found problems with the rule against perpetuities in application in this kind of situation. Legislature, since 1986, our legislature in 1987, have passed statutes to say that the rule against perpetuities does not apply in non-donative situations.
Mr. Posenberg, it was offered to us that it was in 1932 and 1967
yes.
Nevada cases that clarified this issue.
The Atkins case in 1932, this court said that the rule against perpetuities did not apply. Now, they didn't go into the situation of it shouldn't apply to any commercial transaction, but that's the same situation the Colorado Supreme Court was in Whiting Oil, where it set out its history of the cases where it did analyze commercial transactions under the rule against perpetuities and said it was wrong to have done that, that it really should have analyzed them under the rule of unreasonable restrictions and restraints. And in Moore in 1967, this court simply said that you can't have an option for a perpetual option for an unlimited time. It didn't say it violated the rule against perpetuities. It cited CJS, which mentioned the rule against perpetuities. But the Colorado Supreme Court was in the same situation where it said that an unlimited option was void under the rule of unreasonable restraints. So the Moore and Moore Park did not address that situation. It really didn't. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Paulsenberg. Mr. Whiston, again, you're always your excellent arguments and briefs. We appreciate that, and we will take this case under submission.